Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Sideshow Garden Podcast.
You're tuned to another episode of the Sideshow Garden Podcast. Anything you hear on today's episode at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow. I'm Sideshow.com. Did I say that already? I'm unsure. You would think that by now I would have figured out where or how or the next guest might come along, that I might have some sort of format to it. But I think those of you who really know me have had that pint of Guinness with me, that cup of coffee with me, that cup of Two Spots coffee, I should add, have figured out that I have no idea who's next. But I'm delighted to welcome on today's show
John Anderson.
John, for those who are not aware of you, what do you do for a living, John?
I'm a gardener for a living, and I come with a very fancy title called Keeper of the Gardens, who looks after several gardens, the Savile Valley Gardens and Her Majesty's Private Garden at Frogmore for the Crown Estate in Windsor Great Park.
Yeah, I'm going to try and take that in. That's quite the title, isn't it?
It is, yeah, but ultimately I'm a gardener. So when I can, I like to get out and walk the gardens, see all the beautiful things that are going on, and occasionally get my hands dirty.
Let me take this back a little bit and just give me those gardens again. Give me then the relationship between that and Ascot. My apologies to you listening. I'm stumbling a little bit because I've got Stephen Bennett. You might remember I interviewed him a while ago about the Ascot Garden Show, and he mentioned something about this, and so I've got that conversation replaying in the back of my head. What is that join up?
So the Crown Estate basically own Ascot Racecourse, and the association is that we're here to support the Ascot Garden Show since we're the closest neighbour. And it is at the beginning of what is going to be a great garden show going forward. There's some wonderful exhibits, there's some wonderful talks, and ultimately there's some wonderful people here. And to see it, you've got to come and experience it.
So for those of you listening, we're talking about 2019, but if you Google Ascot Spring Garden Show, you'll get a gist of what we were on about. How big is the grounds that you look after?
So one of the gardens, if we take the Valley Gardens, it's about 250 acres plus. There's no boundaries on it because it's within Windsor Great Park, which is something near about 5,000 acres. I also look after, with the team, the Savile Garden, which is that wonderful, unique woodland garden, which is 35 acres. And it has so many components and elements to it as a garden, it's worth seeing almost any time of the year. And then I look after, responsible for looking after Frogmore Gardens, which is near Windsor Great near Windsor Castle, which is beside Windsor Great Park.
How big is that?
That's about 35 acres, and the style of that is very much in the picturesque movement. So people like Dr. Uvedale and the William Gilpin, that sort of style of garden, 18th century.
How many? It's slightly baffling, isn't it? Because I've done the 17th and 18th century stuff, and they say, oh my God, you must have had a team. And I'm going, no, there was four of us. But the difference is when I say that I've designed a 55-acre estate, I know, and you would know, I don't want to take away from breaking this down for you at home, and I wish I didn't bring it this direction, but I'm doing it anyway. But it sounds great when you say there's 1 million acres of gardens that are under my care. And I say, yeah, but many of those are to horses and many of those are to trees. And to put that in context, how intensively is it all landscaped, I suppose, maybe, or planted is the answer. But many staff look after that amount or that size of the grounds, including you.
So for the gardens team, there is about 37 staff, which includes some students. So young professional gardeners come and they do work experience for a year. And so they can get to learn in the different types of gardens, the different components that goes into it. They are intensive gardens. We have 8 national collection of plants. So for things like rhododendron species, we have close on about 350 species. We have many other hybrids. We have a magnolia collection, national collection. We have a mahonia national collection. We have a betula utilis national collection. And I'll stop there, otherwise I'll start boring the listeners.
You're just showing off now. That's what that is. I've got a Ferrari, I've got a Bentley. And by the way, John Lennon gave me that car that's parked in the garage.
That's nothing to do with that. This is not showing off. This is what it is.
I know that.
It's not about showing off, because these plants are living. They have to be looked after. They have to be managed. And it's really lovely. What's one of the nicest things about the job is in gardening is we don't tend to show off. We don't. You can't pull your magnolia up in front of a building and ask someone to park it for you. You've got to go out and actually see it. And it's living, so you're looking after it. And what the great thing is, there's no boundaries in gardening. You get people from all around the world just have an interest. It doesn't matter what your background is. It's that love and passion that you have for something. And it's a bit like this sort of conversation. We're two strangers having a nice conversation. And we could equally just be talking about your little fritillaria meadow that you have in your back garden. I could have 20 acres of it, but it's not about my 20 acres or your little bit. It's the fact we're talking about that individual plant that we grow and enjoy.
I'll put it back to you. I've spoke to the greatest of the great garden designers, and I'm privileged to do that. And they do a show garden at Chelsea, and it lasts for 5 days. And essentially, it's a photograph they have at present now to, I guess, remember that. And a medal, and of course, all the glory, etc., that well-deserved that goes with it. But I am in huge awe for the first time in such a long time of a man where I now wish, you know, when you turn around and go, did you ever want to be Freddie Mercury when you were 5 years of age and you tried to put a, you know, strap on your arm and use the hurling stick or whatever as a microphone or the end of the tennis racket. But this is the first time horticulture in such a long time I've turned around and went, I wish I was you. And it, I love what you said about the collections. And when you were saying it to me, those of you who can't see it at home, but you were smiling. And anybody who smiles when they're talking about something that they do naturally, it's just wonderful. And I do genuinely wish that you weren't as brilliant as you are, so I could be in your shoes.
I don't see myself as being brilliant. What I do see myself is in that very, very privileged position and be able to meet lots of people from all walks of life and to share a passion for something. And as a gardener, I might have that lovely title where I look and manage gardens, is to be able to have a great team so that ultimately, at the end of the day, it's your team that you're working with, you're looking after, that they also have that passion. That we can come to shows like this, meet people, tell them about where we are and what we're doing, and hopefully they'll come and visit us and enjoy life. Enjoy life around gardening.
You said it there, you said privileged. And I would say that almost daily when I'm building gardens at home, when I'm talking to a gentleman like yourself about something that they are equally passionate about, I'll bite different. But how did you end up in the position that you are? Or let me take that a different way. Where did it all start for you from when you were a wee young pup?
Well, when I was a young boy, I grew up in Dublin, in South Dublin. I did Boba Job. My father had a great interest in growing the vegetables, looking after the lawn. And then I got this opportunity to help him. And then some neighbours went by, saw this young boy could help cutting the hedges and moving the manure or filling a skip full of rubbish. Then I went and trained at the Botanic Gardens in Glasnevin in Dublin. So I used to do the eight-mile cycle in those days along Sandy Mount up Gardiner Street, taking in the sort of the fumes behind the buses, getting to Botanic Gardens nice and early, 7 or 8, half 7, to have half an hour or 40 minutes walk around seeing plants. And from those days there, I was able to grow my knowledge. And that, again, is depends on the staff. There was some wonderful staff at the Botanic Gardens at Glasnevin. That, again, sharing and passing on that knowledge. And that's something that we do in gardening. We know if we grow something and you're the only one that have it, you're going to lose it. And by passing that on to somebody, you're safeguarding something that might be special to you, might have memories, that somebody else can grow it and pass it on. And from my days in Glasnevin, I was very fortunate again to get a job as a young head gardener down at Mount Usher in Wicklow, a Robinsonian style garden that's very naturalistic. And I still think today, for the size of acreage that is, 20 acres, it's one of the best pound-for-pound collections of gardens I've ever been to, with such an eclectic mix of beautiful plants. And from those days, I still do to this day, I have a plant of the day. Even at the show, my plant of the day at this show is Pinus Montezuma. There's a small nursery here that sell conifers, and they have this wonderful Mexican blue pine. And of course, Mount Usher had probably one of the most unique specimens in the world growing on its lawn of Pinus Montezuma. From there, over almost 20 years, I went to Kew. So I went off to Kew to sort of foster and develop that interest and passion. And from there, eventually, I went back to Ireland and then on to Scotland, to the National Trust for Scotland's Inverurie Garden, so coastal. And that was wonderful. Just, again, a different style of climate, the Gulf Stream, the winds, of course, the midges. But that range of plants that we couldn't grow, perhaps on the East Coast in Ireland, where tender rhododendrons and tender plants like echiums and around the world used to self-seed, was just wonderful. And then the opportunity came to work at a 250-acre garden in Hampshire, down at Bewley, for the Rothschild family at Exbury. And that, again, was, well, just an amazing opportunity, again, to learn so much more about one of my favourite group of plants, rhododendrons. And then to my present job, which I'm in 2 years, at the Crown Estate at Windsor Great Park, looking after several gardens.
Yeah, that pause was probably... I could have edited that out, I'm sure, but it's like somebody saying to you, here's my final collection, and you realise they've got the... What have I got? I have Rubber Soul and Beatles for Sale in mono on vinyl. And I remember Sean saying this to a friend of mine, and he had the entire Beatles collection, original, on vinyl, from the day it came out, and I went, yeah.
But I think, if all of that, if I had to pick just one, it's the moment you have in each one of these gardens that are really important. It's not about the size, the scale. Sometimes you make things happen for yourself. Sometimes there's luck in there. But for a horticulturist or for a gardener, having had these opportunities, it's about, for me, was learning the plants, work in these wonderful places, and also passing that on. So to younger students now and to staff, it's about giving them opportunities that I had to develop their own skills going forward. And that's really important. And going back to a collection, if it's a bit like a desert island disc. If you had to just take one song of those Beatles, which one would it be?
Oh, hold on. Now you're the host of the Sod Show and I'm being interviewed.
We're having a conversation, in a pub.
Well, I said conversation in a pub. Well, I didn't know I was going to be asked questions. So I'm the quiet fella at the best of times. I can hear you laughing. I love when they did Get Back live on the rooftop of Apple Studios. And I just loved that little bit of keyboard in the back of it. And there was something real and raw. And I know they hadn't played live in a very long time. So that really gets the hairs up on the back of my neck. When I see that video footage and the people down on the street looking up on them and that 70s clothes style range, which reminds me of my mum and my dad on honeymoon. This has thrown me a slight bit.
Well, I think if I was to pick a Beatles song, it'd probably be Hey Jude.
Yeah, I can go with that.
Yeah. I just like that. So the melody, I just like the words, and something you can relax to.
Yeah. Do you find it easy to relax? Do you wind down well? Are you on tender hooks because there's a, let's be honest about it, there's a title over a garden and there's your name over a garden as well, I suppose. Is that a fair way to put that?
I think it's a fair way, yeah. I don't relax easy. I don't unwind very easy. This is quite an interesting one. I was asked, I went back to Ireland a couple of weeks ago to a 40th school reunion. I've avoided all the others in the past. I thought, I sat around the kitchen table with my wife and two kids. I've got two youngish kids, Malachi and Sorrel. And I said to my wife, how would you sum me up in one word? And she says, you're an anorak. And I thought, how could I be an anorak? I was probably slightly taken aback. Well, she says, if you're on the house on your own, you don't answer the phone. Okay.
Yeah.
You rarely go out. And you'll sit in front of your laptop putting plant pictures into folders and files all night long. She says, you're an anorak. I said, I need to change that. So I play tennis now and I relax playing tennis.
Okay, I know this is a garden podcast. I get that. I'll get back there in a minute. But, you know, if you've heard Kate Gold's interview and you've heard James Basson's, we do end up in strange places. But I'll come back to it in a bit. But how did you end up, why tennis? You could have picked crochet, bowls. No, I didn't say croquet. I said crochet. Cooking, whatever things get on my nerves. You could have picked any of them.
You're absolutely right. There's lots of things I could have picked. But I always have enjoyed tennis as a single game. I can just carry a racket. I could, of course, carry needles and wool and stuff like that. But growing up in the 70s, to me, Bjorn Borg was just, for me, the epitome of just ice coolness. And I sometimes think, when I'm playing tennis, I'm going to be like Bjorn Borg, but I can't. My personality doesn't allow me to be like Bjorn Borg. But I just love the idea that this, his style of tennis and his whole ambience was just wonderful.
I remember watching Bjorn Borg. Did I even say that right? I'm confused. This is with an Irish accent, it doesn't sound right. But Borg, we'll go with that. And Mark Bolan and T-Rex was playing in the background. And I just thought to myself, holy good God, this is just wonderful. And then we hit the 80s and Wham came out and it all went a bit pear-shaped after that. Give me an average day, I was going to say, at the office. I don't know how to ask you that question, because if you worked in a garden centre, it'd be really easy, or maybe if it was a little bit of a smaller estate. But I gather you've a team of full-time arborists. I gather you grow a lot of your own plants. You nearly have to be a master of all trades, a jack of none, in every department.
I think you're on the right lines. So I'll just give you an average sort of an average week.
Yeah.
So I'll probably get up around 5:30 in the morning. In fact, I do get up at 5:30 in the morning, nearly every morning. I go to work at 6:30. Like these days, it's all about handling their emails and stuff and so on. Then at some stage, I will leave the office and go out and meet some of the team. So supervisors, I have a deputy keeper of the gardens, Harvey Stevens. So I've got a great team. Go out and see someone during the day. We'll pick up on things. There will be several meetings. Of course, these days there will be sort of health and safety. As a senior manager in the Crown Estate, I will deal with my other colleagues. So there is a chief forester. There is a superintendent of the parks that looks after everything outside the gardens. Finance director. So it's a very big park with lots of components. I will finish work sometimes between 5 and 6 during the month of several months. So April is a busy month. Every single weekend I'll be working. So this show obviously is over a weekend. I'm here for the duration of the weekend, either giving talks or advice, certainly been around, and then meeting people and so on. So it's the Royal Horticultural Main Rhododendron Show at Rosemore in North Devon. So the team and myself will go down there and exhibit at rhododendron shows and so on. We hosted at Savile Gardens the early rhododendron show for the RHS. Previous week to that was Easter. So we're around making sure everything is working well. So some months you can be working majority of the days. Other months you might have a few weekends off.
Here's one for you. And I get this usually when the sun is shining and my Irish man tan lines may be a little bit more on show. I couldn't say that with a straight face, so I tried. I tried my hardest. Where was I going? Sorry. But people tend to say to me around that time, it must be great to work in the great outdoors, or it must be great to do the job that you do. And I do say yes in brackets. I'm privileged in every sense of the word to sit here to build gardens in Dublin. I think I said to James Basson, being married to somebody who's involved in the horticulture industry can be challenging for the other person more so than, let's say, a you or a me. Because if you're self-employed, the chances of you going broke are relatively high if the weather's not on song. And irrespective of whether it's your job or it's my job, your name is still at the top of the page. You still have deadlines to fulfill. And in 1 year's time, nobody cares the fact that you had snow 12 months or 11 months previous. Does any of that make sense to you? And are you still privileged, but you identify with the, do I call them pitfalls, challenges for the person who's at home saying, why is daddy missed out on another anniversary? Not intentionally, I'll bite.
You're absolutely right. There are challenges at all levels, whether you're self-employed. In my case, some of the gardens and the team that I'm managing, there are always challenges. Probably more challenges now than there was in the past when I had the days of Mount Usher, when you sort of went into work at 8 o'clock in the morning, you did a full solid day's gardening. Today there's so many other components involved in it. There's health and safety, there's the risk assessments. None of that's really existed back in those early 80 days. In some cases this is really good. What we have to learn is that we have to do all this today, and that's fine. It's not to let it get in the way of what we're doing. There are always going to be challenges in this particular role that I play, and some of them are demanding. Some of those are less demanding, but it's you average it out and you think, this is why I'm here, because I want to enjoy this and I love what I'm doing and I'm passionate about what I'm doing and I want to make a difference and I want to help people so they can enjoy their jobs and enjoy visiting the gardens. And yes, we have challenging in weather. We've had a challenging winter this past few months, But you know what? On a sunny day like today, you tend to start forgetting about all those wet days, and you look forward all the time. You're getting your new plans ahead. And my wife, who is a horticulturist, who's just taken a little bit of time out looking after the children, enjoys the outdoors. My children enjoy the outdoors. Just of interest, they get 20 minutes a day on the iPad. That's it. They self-regulate themselves. But they're at the show here today, and they enjoy it. And that's a great thing if you can have a family that enjoys being in the outdoor. They understand the job I have, but I tend not to miss the anniversaries at my peril.
I thought he was deviating off the point and he wasn't going to come back to him, but he did. He did. It's a bit like an Irish pub, and I said this yesterday to Stephen Bennett. I said, you know, you could have the finest pub in the planet, but if the guy behind the bar is, nobody goes into it. Does that identify with you on a parks garden side of things?
I do. I, you're right. It's like walking into whether it's a restaurant, whether it's a garden, whether it's a pub. You walk in there and you take in what is the atmosphere of the place first. And if the individual or person behind the bar, behind the counter reception, greets you nicely, and you genuinely pick it up. But when you meet someone who's genuinely personal and welcomes you genuinely, you start to feel relaxed and you'll start to enjoy a place.
You do enjoy it more, though. It's not my imagination.
It's not your imagination. Right. But I think you do feel, when you walk into a place, you can feel a good atmosphere. And it doesn't have, like some restaurants, you walk in, it may not have gold-plated chairs or knives and forks. It's about how good the food is and the atmosphere in it. That's like a garden. You walk into a garden, you feel relaxed. You feel, oh, look, I'm enjoying this. Let's explore. Let's go on over there and have a look at those plants. It's several components would make something great.
Top five things I should walk in and see where you go, oh, my God, Peter, I have to do this.
If you're going to Savile Garden, you have to go this time of the year to Springwood to see the rhododendrons and the magnolias. You have to go to see the alpine meadow with its dwarf narcissi. Dwarf daffodils naturalize up along the streams. You have to go to the Chelsea Bridge and look down the stream to see the skunk cabbage naturalize in the meadows with camellias and other daffodils flowering nearby. You have to see and catch the tail end of the winter garden with the willows in the wet showing off in the daylight today. They're wonderful bright yellow stems. The dogwoods with their fiery reds and oranges. You just cannot miss that. And last of all, you've got to go into the building and see our loos. They are the best loos in the world.
Really?
You said really for the wrong thing. You really should have said, wow, those dogwoods sound amazing. Really, your spring woods should be amazing with magnolias, but you said really over loos.
No, I said really because you mentioned loos. You brought it up, not me. I would have stuck with the horticulture, which is, it's not an interior design practice that I run. Why did you mention the loos?
Because I remember years ago when I was at Mount Usher, John Sales, I think it was, who was head of the National Trust for England, said, if you give the public a good car park, the coaches can park, a good cup of tea, yeah, and good loos, they don't care where they are. But we do care where they are. And we're giving you a great car park, an amazing building with wonderful loos, and a garden to behold as one of the finest woodland gardens in the UK.
I'm looking forward to seeing you. I can't believe I'm saying this. I'm looking forward to seeing your loos. I've said it. People are going to listen to this podcast, and it might be the middle of June, April, January, August, December. And they're saying, okay, Peter, look, I'm bought. I heard the story. I'm warming to the guy behind the bar. That's you, is it, by the way? The same question, five things, but give it to me in a month.
So if you're coming into the gardens over the next May and June, you've got to come and see the cherry trees. If you're coming in June, you've got to see the June border with the peonies and the old-fashioned roses. If you're coming in July, the herbaceous borders, the double-sided herbaceous border is absolutely amazing. August, you get the second flush of roses in the rose garden and the golden jubilee with its delphiniums and all those wonderful asters and cleomes. And that's only one small part of the gardens.
Well, give me the winter one, because that's the one that people say, no, you can't go to a garden. In fact, wasn't it Malahide Castle used to close their gardens for 6 months of the year, and it used to drive me spare because I wanted to see it in its not greatest state. I appreciate what it did, but I also wanted to see it imperfect because I learned a little bit more. You could see them just about to sprout or still sprouting and say, okay, it's not just me, it's them as well.
Well, as you lead out of autumn with the wonderful autumn colour from the Japanese cherries, you're leading into winter. And we believe we've got one of the finest winter gardens around our stream, which has basically got things like various different dogwoods. I mean, Annie's Winter Orange, if you don't know it, you have to see it. It is probably one of the best dogwood stems that you can possibly get. We've got lots of willows along by the stream. We've got, again, Daphne, Jacqueline Postel, for those who know it, is wonderfully scented. There's Sarcococcus in there. There's a wonderful Acer Valley Phantom, which has got that lovely white bloom on its stems. Prunus rufa. So you've got to come for the winter. This is an all-year-round garden in 35 acres that has been various improvements made to it by various keepers of the garden. So from John Bond to Mark Flanagan to myself and the team, the gardens are always changing and improving.
This isn't making Irish references for the sake of it, but if you've been to Donegal looking out over the coast up around Carrigart, where I was, I think I'd built a garden up there, and that four seasons in one day. But standing up on the top of a hill, watching the shadows on the grass, based on what was happening with the clouds up above and the change in weather, is phenomenal. That sounds a little bit silly and maybe hard to picture for some of you at home, but just watching the colour of the grass change, because the weather in Donegal was that four seasons, not in one day, it was per half hour nearly when we were building up there. Is yours one of them where you could take a photograph, let's say in December at 2 o'clock, and it just never looks the same at any one point in time?
I don't think I'd equate it to Donegal, probably more to the west coast of Scotland when I was at Inverview, because again, the weather changes that quickly. You do get your sort of four seasons in an hour or a day or whatever. At the Savile Gardens, it's probably more to do with a sort of a two season. You can start off in winter with a hard frost, and that frost is lifting during the day as the sun comes out and captures it. You may get a sort of a cloud shadow later on in the day. I think what they've done in the Savile Garden is created pictures. Mm. So the winter garden is a picture scene of wonderful stems. When you look at Donegal or whatever, you've got that natural, your landscape is powerful because you've got the elements of the wind and you've got the elements of the sun and you've got the aspect of looking down the mountain and it's changing in front of you. We've created that in the garden. So the winter garden is something you can stand on a bridge, capture the reflections in the water, but you need the sunlight. You need Ekins to bring out those fiery reds and greens and oranges and yellows from the stems of the dogwood, and it is spectacular. You get it at the right moment. It's something that you'll remember for a long time.
I've got Kate Bush singing Wuthering Heights in my head now, and that video is playing on loop, the one with the Top of the Pops smoke machine happening in it, yeah.
I had Stairway to Heaven, Jimmy Page.
Right. it's not just me in this one. It's not just me. For those who've never been before, just very quickly, how or what is the best way to travel to the gardens?
By car. You're coming off the M3. It's west of London. You can get a train to Egham and catch a taxi. You can go to Windsor and catch the number one bus, which will take you into the park. And it'll be a 10 or 15 minute walk from there.
What's the nearest airport?
Heathrow. So from Heathrow, you can be in the Windsor Great Park of landing within an hour. Go for the day if you're coming from Ireland or parts of Europe.
How much does it cost in, actually, while I have you?
It's about £10 to get in. You can become a member for £70, which means gives you parking in most areas of the park itself, and that gives you free access into the gardens for the year. It is a really good deal, and it's a great place to come.
£10 for a day. I'm trying to think of the last time I did anything for £10. When was the last time you did anything for £10?
I owe my children pocket money, which is £10.
You don't really come out of that equation very well, though, do you?
No, I don't. But actually, they have to earn it. So, yeah, it's worth it.
Yeah, but what can you do for £10?
They'll find something, don't worry.
I don't mean them, I mean you. What can you do for £10?
I could get a bus into Windsor. Return.
You don't have enough money to get in. You should have walked. You only got £10. Okay. Anything you need, at Sideshow on Twitter, facebook.com/TheSideshow. Sideshow.com. I'm going to look forward to heading to the garden, so I think I've got a better insight. I think I'm going to smile when I walk around, and the smile will be genuine. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much. It's been an absolute pleasure.